You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Kane seemed fine. We were all having dinner and, it must have laid something inside his throat, some sort of embryo. He started,
Look, man, I only need to know one thing. Where they are.
Go Vasquez, kick ass.
Anytime, anywhere. Man.
Right, right. Somebody said alien. She thought they said illegal alien and signed up.
Fuck you, man.
Anytime, anywhere.
Are you finished?
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 90 for the 13th of June, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm not doing too badly, man. It's good. I'm excited about this show. This is definitely back to the old geek crew going on
just
right now.
You and me tonight, dude. We should explain. Richard is off lost in the wilds of the Sydney Film Festival. so we haven't heard hide nor hair from him for days. I think he's a bear.
He'll probably pop out the other end of it with a beard.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Oh, like, not his normal beard either. I'm talking like a giant Alan Moore style beard.
Or one of those beards like, you know, the hermit from Life of Brian.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Richard, we love you. We can't wait till you come back. Get in contact with us, dude. We're wondering where you are. We should also apologize for the lateness of this episode. This episode was supposed to be out a few days ago. Work commitments. I'm actually in training at the moment for a new position, and it's killing me. But that's okay. We won't go into any more details than that. But yeah, work has just been very hard. So we are just trying to get this stuff out as fast as we can. But sometimes things just, life gets in the way. We've talked about that before.
Yes, it does.
It does. But what are we doing today? First of all, Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week we are going to be talking about probably, arguably, one of the most anticipated geek films of the year. Mm. Now, I know we said that about Avengers as well, but this actually has a lot of cred to it. This is Ridley Scott's Prometheus. And for those who don't know, a prequel to Alien, which basically science fiction is a genre that Scott helped redefine. And this is his first foray into science fiction in what? Are we talking 30 years?
Mm.
Something like that. So there's there was a lot of speculation as to whether he could redefine the genre again. We will talk more about that a little bit later on. We took last week off, some of you might have noticed. That was because we really had to mull this over.
It was funny, wasn't it? It's sort of like when we walked out of the cinema, we all kind of made a pact almost immediately going, we need some time with this one. This is not one you can half review.
No, we needed to have time to think about it and second viewings. And so we are prepared now, we believe, to actually lay down judgment on Prometheus and to see whether or not it did redefine the genre or whether or not it was a steaming mess. We'll let you come back and hear the end of this after we talk about a couple of our other sections. First of all, though, Josh, we should say, what you been watching?
Oh, man. At the moment, I have been absolutely inanimate with work, so there's been very little time to get outside and see anything.
I kind of know that feeling.
Yeah. I've literally taken today entirely off just to try and catch up. I've sat down and watched a couple of things. There's a film which I will be reviewing soon. I managed to get a friend of mine had access to a screening. So there's a film coming up. I'm not going to talk about it yet because I'm going to save it for a section that I regulate,
cool,
which you know all about.
Yep.
I've seen a film I can't talk about yet. I've missed out on a bunch of screenings this week, and I'm really upset just due to complete destruction of my social life. Apart from that, man, I'm still knocking through Full Metal Alchemist. I have started Louis, which is a TV series about that has Louis C.K. Have you seen any of his stuff?
I haven't seen any of it of the series. I've seen him, and this series is something I've been wanting to watch for some time. This is the series.
It's the same kind of jokes, and that's what you have to love about the man. The man speaks with such honesty that it is literally staggering. Like the way that he talks about his family and how incredibly uncensored he is disturbing.
No, and yeah, and this is a series that he literally shoots himself, and he edits it on his MacBook. You know, it's like, I'm dying to see this show. It's supposed to be just absolute low budget glory.
I will have to loan you the DVDs of his stand-up, man, because you really have to catch up on that.
I've seen a bunch of his stand-up. I think Louis C.K. is a very funny man.
Yeah. So, but that's been about it, man. That's all I've had time for.
Fair enough.
And then, of course, there's that one other thing.
We'll come back to that in just one second. I actually had a bit of a week of rewatching stuff, and I actually did get to two screenings, one of which I can't talk about yet. I am embargoed. We got an early screening on something, which I will talk about later. But, yeah, we will probably actually review it further down the track. But I also saw a screening of a film called Friends with Kids. This is actually, it almost felt like the Bridesmaids reunion episode, because it was literally starring John Hamm, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Chris O'Dowd. are we seeing a connection here? But it's actually not anything to do with that film. It just happens to have a lot of the same cast. But basically, it's about two best friends who decide that they don't want to do, they, you know, the whole marriage thing seems to be killing their friends and everything, so they decide just to have a kid together. And share it. And it's actually not a bad film. I quite liked it a lot. The thing that fascinated me about this film was it stars a woman called Jennifer Westfeldt, who also wrote and directed the film. And I've never heard of her before. And it was vaguely distracting throughout the whole film, thinking, who are you and how did you get the clout to pull this together? And I found myself in the end credits watching the thank you section of the end credits, just seeing who she knew. You know, and as it turns out, all these names were coming past on the credit list, like special thank yous to Seth Rogen and all sorts of people. So she obviously has a lot of connections in the comedy world. And these, obviously, you know, Kristen Wiig and all these people who are in it, obviously helping her out as well. She's not bad. And the film is actually quite entertaining and well worth having a look at. It's not your typical rom-com. It's actually got... and it's ironic because he's actually in the film as well, which was, you know, Ed Burns. It's got kind of that Ed Burns feeling to the comedy, so it's kind of dark comedy. And it's funny because when he shows up halfway through the film and is in like the better half of the second half of the film, you find yourself, hello, what was that? You find yourself,
that was definitely yours. That was, I don't have iPhone.
That's true. That was actually my email. I thought I'd turn the sound off. That it was definitely Ed Burnsian feeling in the middle of it. It had that kind of weird feeling to it, but it was good. I liked it a lot. The other thing that I did this week was I rewatched a couple of films that I'd already seen, particularly because my son wanted to see them. We rewatched Chronicle, I actually really enjoyed second time around. I thought it was still holds up. I
love that film.
Yeah, and he really liked it as well. It's a film about the kids who get superpowers, obviously, and how they deal with it. And the other one I rewatched, which was a film I actually even avoided at the cinema, I didn't avoid it at the cinema, but I didn't want to see it at the cinema, but was Tower Heist, which I actually begrudgingly really enjoyed the first time around, and found myself really liking it the second time around, finding myself really being entertained. In particular, I have to say, by Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, but I think the whole thing with that film is it's a DVD watch. It's not a cinema watch.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know, it's the Friday night film that you picked up for $3.99 from iTunes or something. It's that film.
Yeah, and it is. It, very much
that time in its life, you'll probably like it a lot more than I did at the cinema, because I was like, don't know if you really captured what I was looking for here.
But that being said, even at the cinema, against all odds,
I don't like comedy.
Well, there is that. Against all odds, I actually thought it was not a bad film, and it's funny because it's Brett Ratner directing it, and I think, well, I had this conversation with Richard, actually. I can't remember if it was on air or not, when I said I kind of found his niche. Brett Ratner is not inherently a bad director. He just doesn't direct other things well. You know what I mean? It's like, when he directs in his wheelhouse, he's actually quite entertaining. You know, he actually, when he directs these fun, light caper films that have no substance, he is in his wheelhouse. That's exactly what he directs, and he has a lot of fun doing it. He should just not be directing anything with depth.
That's true.
So I think when we put it this way, he's not an Uwe Boll. He's not just an outright bad director. I think he's just not capable of directing anything outside of what he does.
Exactly. Yeah. His mind thinks in a particular way and he does that well.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying he's brilliant, so don't write me emails, people. I'm not saying he's a brilliant director. I'm just saying he does what he does. You know what I mean? Anyway, that being said, I think we're going into the basement, Josh.
Oh, man, it's cold, though.
I know. It's cold. Fine. Well, we'll have to put a heater on down there.
Let's do it.
Good evening and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
Creepier every time. As you know, Dave, my house is kind of a mess and a splattering of films that are just literally jammed into places that I can fit them because I just have that many. I have boxes, I have, you know, a wall full of DVDs, and then I have the front DVDs that are in front of those DVDs because I've run out of space to put DVDs.
It's true, people. I've seen it. It's true.
Yeah. And inside that pile of stuff, I very often pick up DVDs that I bought at some stage. You know those ones that you find and you're just like, I haven't seen that. And that premise is enough to keep my eyes for 2.5 seconds. Therefore, it's definitely worth my money. Or at least that's how I feel. I actually think that's a borderline addiction right there. But
kind of. I think you are describing. I think we need to get into a 12-step.
You don't want me to go into 12-step because if I did, I'd stop bringing you gold and gems like I'm going to this time.
That's true. We need the stuff that has dialogue like this.
We're almost home. I hope we meet up with those red tails next time.
Which I'm sure will be in the bargain basement one day.
I really hope I never stumble across that film again. And if I do, I'm quite sure I will laugh at it. So anyway, the film that I watched was called Shelter, and I found this amongst my DVDs, and I immediately, of course, did what all modern children do when you see a movie that you don't actually know or recognize. I jumped on IMDb, and it's only got a 6 out of 10, and I was like, well, that seems like bargain territory.
That's a good score.
So let's have a look now. I don't know either of the directors. They're actually foreign. I'm not going to try and say.
Well, one of them is Mans Marlind Bjornstein.
And that's probably not how it says, but he's the guy that did Underworld Awakening, the new one.
Oh, right. That's why that name seems familiar to me.
Exactly. Now, this film is a really interesting concept because I have a huge problem with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. I have seen him in several films, none of which I would take home or try and remember. I literally can't stand this guy. I just think that he is the most one-faced, plain actor ever. He has that unfortunate pretty boy look that some actors get.
Yeah. And he was, we always come back to Paris with Love, or From Paris with Love, whatever that thing's called.
Or Tudors as well.
Or Tudors, yeah.
Isn't that as well? And of course, on the other side of things, you have Julianne Moore being the lead for this film. And the concept is that she, her character doesn't really believe in multiple personality disorder. She thinks it's a fake thing. And so her whole thing is that she gets introduced to this person called David.
Okay.
And this guy essentially basically is apparently an extreme case. And you have, I'm not sure if you know him, but Jeffrey DeMann.
That sounds familiar.
You should remember him.
I should.
He has been in everything. He was in The Walking Dead.
Oh, it's Dale.
Dale.
Yeah, okay.
That's correct. Anyway, so he comes very smugly, as he does. You know how he has that smug face that he can pull off where he's really, really smart looking. I do like that face, by the way.
I love Jeffrey DeMann. He was also really, really good in Green Mile.
Exactly. And I love this guy for his thing, and he's doing what he does really well in this film. Essentially, he brings her this case where he's like, essentially, this is a slightly different one, and I don't know if you're going to be able to get to the bottom of this. You know, that kind of detective-esque story that you throw at that. I love those films. I love those films where you're guessing as much as the character is. And so the concept is that she meets David, she interviews David. They have really good chemistry on screen, very good chemistry on screen. She's aged terribly, or at least they've aged her terribly in this film. And she is a very worn looking person. And it's kind of, it becomes a psychological, I wouldn't say cat and mouse, but it's sort of like neither of them are really, he's not dumb and he's definitely not playing anything apart from a character.
Right.
He's basically, you can tell that there's, he's only letting out one side of himself and he doesn't really seem to know if there is anything to him. She then comes out of the room and then call him on a phone. Then they meet Adam. And we don't get to see what happens, but essentially you hear a very violent sound off screen, to which she looks horrified, and then we start talking to a second, much more different person. And as we break up into the personalities that this guy has, we're essentially dealing with something that we're not quite sure what's going on and where these people are coming from and what they are, and are they all a thing in his mind, or is it, you know? And so she goes out and tries to find him. The problem is this film only works in concept and begins to fall apart the second that it continues, because you stop caring because nothing really happens. And it's really sad, because it's one of those films where you look at it and you're like, a little bit more time, a lot more cutting, and a bit more scene work. Like, really delve into the characters of each one of these personalities, and you could have come out with a really good film. Problem is, it falls apart and literally has one of those turn around and wink to the camera endings.
I hate that, especially when you have this sort of film.
Exactly, because it's like, it is the ultimate sin you can commit with a film like this.
Do you know the ultimate film that did that for me, which I hated the ending and I really enjoyed the film, was Devil's Advocate.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the ending to that film? That was like the literal version of somebody winking at camera. And it was like, all I could think was, wow, that really just cheapened everything.
Yeah, it just kind of takes what could have been a good story and just sort of rubs it down a little bit, like almost knocks a point off itself.
I think we should point out, I think we actually never mentioned the title of the film. So the film is Shelter.
Shelter.
Shelter that you're talking about from 2010. Yeah. Interesting. Because looking at this IMDb entry that I'm looking at right now, it looks like something I'd really like to see.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, perhaps you can have a look at it yourself. But it's interesting. I don't want to wreck anything because it is one of those storyline kind of, it's kind of a story that slowly gives you more to itself, and then that's all given through more and more story, like more and more explanation. But as the explanation kind of grows out to an end point, it just kind of fizzles out instead of giving you a really strong finish. It's, again, the problem is that it's also one of those films that's quite hard to talk about without wrecking any plot.
Yeah, it's
so
a little
I'm just
going
to say,
if
you find it and stumble across it by accident, perhaps watch it as somebody that likes to just find films that are a little bit different, or those films that still got a decent budget but just didn't quite make it. It's definitely not my typical bargain basement trash that I find, but it wouldn't slide above a 6. I think IMDb, for once, actually really nails it as a 6 out of 10.
That's good. Okay, that's interesting. You know, another film that I was trying to say before that's kind of in the same sort of vein, where it's a film where you go, I really want to talk about it because it's not perfect. It is kind of a 6 out of 10 film. But it's got some really interesting ideas, and it is the film Identity with John Cusack.
Oh, yeah.
But exactly, once again,
the same feeling, man.
Another exactly film you can't talk about because you don't want to give anything away.
Exactly. It's very much like that kind of a feel to it, but Identity actually did it a lot better than this did. Mm.
And the film that did this really well, same sort of idea again, was Primal Fear.
Ah, yes.
Which actually pulled it off, you know what I mean? And then that, so yeah, this, I love that kind of film, though. I really do. So I'm going to have to see this.
Yeah, we will have to organize that. But anyway, I think we should close the door because it's freezing here and it's even more freezing down there.
It is. Here we go. All right, there we go. Okay.
Seriously, man, that thing needs oil as well.
It all adds to the character.
It does. It's a really horrible sounding basement in everybody's mind.
I think so. It's kind of dingy and it's got moss on the walls. All right. Let's talk about a feature film. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
I think the film on every geek's lips at the moment has got to be Prometheus, even though it did come out. We are talking, a week ago now, I guess it came out. Yeah. We saw it early because we saw a screening. And then we really had to wait until it came out because we needed to see it again. before we could really talk about it. The film is Ridley Scott, directed by Ridley Scott. It's his return to science fiction, as we said at the beginning of the show. Written by, now I cannot pronounce this guy's name, John Spates, something like that. And rewritten by Damon Lindelof, who is one of the creators and head writers of Lost, for those who don't know, or think the name is might be familiar. The film stars, now it actually has an interesting cast, so Noomi Rapace from the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Michael Fassbender, Charlize Theron, Idris Elba, Guy Pearce, in a very, very, very small role. I think he's a hologram, isn't he? Yeah, he's a hologram. Near the beginning of the film. The hologram.
We can't talk about the rest.
No. anybody who has seen the TED Talk know that he's around. Logan, Marshall Green, Sean Harris, and I think the rest of the cast are pretty much unknown. Oh, Patrick Wilson's in it briefly. Anyway. Okay, so according to IMDb, it says a team of...
Oh, I can't wait to see what that... Hit me with it, Dave. What was the storyline about?
A team of explorers discover a clue to the origins of mankind on Earth, leading them on a journey to the darkest corners of the universe. There, they must fight a terrifying battle to save the future of the human race. That is not this film.
I think that's perhaps the film I wanted to see.
Maybe.
Hey, Dave, can I lead on this one?
Yes, you can. Let's just listen to the trailer real quick, and then we're going to kick off into this, and we will have a spoiler zone on this. We have to. There's a lot of stuff we can't talk about. So let's listen to this trailer, and we'll be right back.
A king has his reign.
Civilizations that were separated by centuries, and yet this same pictogram was discovered in every one of them.
They're smiling.
I think they want us to come and find them.
We're all here because of a map you two kids found in a cave.
Not a map, an invitation.
From whom?
Please tell me you can read that.
Prometheus, are you seeing this?
Whatever that probe is picking up, it's reading life form.
What do you mean a life form?
Oh, the head.
They're changing.
Changing into what?
It's moving. These things moving.
What is that?
That is a ship.
They're leaving.
To go where?
Earth.
We were so wrong.
Take us home! If you don't stop it, there won't be any home to go back to.
Why is that door open? Cut it off! Cut it
And we're back. All right, Josh, you want to lead us off?
All right, man. Now, look, I have to explain to people because I really want to get across the message of this, because I think geeks as a culture are a group of people that have to band together, right? Okay, and you guys have to understand that I don't say anything out of this situation without a whole lot to back it up. Now, I have seen this film almost 3 times now, and I'll explain what that means later. So I've seen 3 different screenings of this. Now, I have given this as much time in front of me as I can possibly give it to get the best review I can, because this is important to me. This film is not something that I can say or do lightly, because I have watched the Alien quadrilogy literally since I was about 15 years old. Now, obviously, I'm not saying all the films were out all the times I watched it, but I've essentially been watching Aliens almost at least one time for the entire four of them every year of my life.
Right.
I think I hold these as an actual Bible to geek cred. This is as important to me as any of my horror series. I am aware they're not perfect, and I know their place in society. I know that not everyone's going to like 3 and 4, and we will get into that later. No,
I'm sure we will.
Now, not everybody's going to like those films, and I completely understand why. So don't think that I'm coming in going, these are the four films that are perfect, and Prometheus is something else. These films have their flaws, bar one, which I still hold as a perfect film, near perfect.
No, I'm going to go so far as to say number one really holds up.
Yeah, number one does not age.
No.
It's still just as good as it was the day I originally watched it. Now, I watched all of the films before this came out, so I knew everything that was in the Alien mythos fresh in my head as I walked into that cinema. And when I walked out of that cinema, Dave, and you can quote on this because we all felt the same way, none of us knew what to think.
No, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
We literally were shocked at what we had seen. And that first time I remember saying to you, I was like, I don't want to talk about this right now.
No, we all came out and basically all said the same thing, which was, we need to process this.
Yeah, there's so much that happens on that screen. It's ridiculous. So I went and saw it again. I saw it in 2D after seeing it in 3D the first time.
Right.
And then I watched the third time in 3D again. So what I can say is this, when you go into Prometheus, you kind of unfairly kind of required to check your alienness at the door if you want to give this any shit show a chance of enjoying it, because it's like what they will show you will definitely stretch the mythos. Mm. And when I say stretch, I'm not necessarily meaning entirely in a bad way, but they are going in a very different direction with it.
Yeah.
They are starting fresh with elements of the films, like fanboy elements, and they are moving in a completely different direction. I want people to know that that is not an issue in my eyes. I do not see that as a problem. Taking what they did as a concept and adding it to the film's mythos, I think, is perfectly fine with me.
Agreed.
I think that they did that bit really well. I think the first half of this film is actually a real treat to watch. You have an amazing 3D. Let's just talk 3D for a moment, Dave. Wow.
Look, yeah, wow. Look, I think Ridley Scott just took everybody, including James Cameron, to school on how to do 3D.
Oh, hell yes, man. Our Avatar's Avatar without question. Now, I don't need necessarily an entire scope film-wise, but use of 3D.
Use of 3D. Ridley Scott, for those who don't know, has a background in graphic design and advertising. The man is a visualist, and everything he does has a visual flair, and this is what makes him such a really interesting filmmaker. Even when his films suck, they always look good. I mean it's just what he does. And absolutely. Prometheus looks magnificent. I mean, it's just a beautiful film to look at. And the 3D is staggering. I mean, his
it
sense
will of literally blow you away.
It will. And it's sense of composition is remarkable. He knows exactly what he's doing. He shoots it like his previous Alien film. So he shoots it with long corridors, and he shoots it with always has a foreground, a midground, and a background. So you actually always have a sense of depth to everything that he does. There's never a shot in this where you sit and go, what a flat shot. Why would you do that in 3D? He doesn't. He keeps it in 3D. And it's not even gimmicky. It is just depth. It's just he sucks you into his screen and keeps you there. Absolutely no problem. If you want to see what you're absolutely capable of doing in 3D, this is the film to go see, just for that reason.
Absolutely.
Okay, so aside when from that.
When we get past the 3D and we get past the concept of this film, we get given something that for the first half is a really tense, really interesting, almost rehash of Alien in a lot of ways. That concept of a group of people that have met slightly but are all kind of work-related situations flying to a planet to investigate something. Mm. At its core, that is pretty much a very similar story. We can all agree on that.
Yep.
And they go out of the ship, and they go out in, you know, well, almost a storm. We'll get to that later. And then during that piece, we get what we got in Alien, which is we get that really interesting sense of terrifyingness. We get that kind of like tenseness because we know we're in a place that is obviously of the unknown, and we are left with a very interesting sense of kind of wonderment to what we see and the visual cues that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I give it everything. But then when we get to the second half of this film, it just falls apart in the worst possible ways. Now, like I said, I've seen this 3 times and I walked out on the 3rd time because I got to the halfway mark and I went, there is nothing left in this film that I care about. And I literally walked out because after watching this film 3 times, I realized that it is that second half where things just start getting dicey. In a film with a budget as big as this is, to screw up story is a really big issue, and I'm not letting it go. Like, people are saying the fan service, the visuals, I'm not worried about that. I'm giving it a review as a film, and as a film, it fails.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I'll flick to you for a while because I've been talking for ages, Dave. Yeah, so no, take right. us from there.
All right. So, look, I agree with you. I agree with you to probably about 80%. I think, look, I don't hate the film. And on second viewing, the reason why you see it a second time is to basically shake the hype and watch it for the film as the film is. I think as a film, it's okay. And that's the problem.
I just need to jump into one thing to say. I am aware that it's not perfect. I would put it above 3 and 4 easily.
Yeah, well, easily, and you'll find out more about that later. By the way, we never mentioned what our list of 5 is. Our list of 5 coming up, by the way, is list of 5 most disappointing blockbusters. So you might guess that something's coming up. but yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that if you're going to put it in the Alien scale, it's definitely, 1, 2, 5. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like
1, 2 Prometheus.
1, 2 Prometheus, but I didn't hate the film. And that was the most disturbing thing about that preview screening was normally you come out and you go, yeah, I enjoyed that, or no, that was kind of mediocre, or whatever. I walked out of the first screening of Prometheus going, I don't know. I actually don't know. I didn't hate it, but something's wrong here. Something didn't sit well with me. And I was fighting myself trying to figure out what it was. Was I just being apologetic because I'm a geek and thinking, oh no, I have to like it? But no, that wasn't it either. There was something about the film that doesn't sit well. And I think it really came down for me was the fact that I think the problem lies in the script. So I don't think the problem is actually Ridley Scott's in this case. I mean, in the sense, oh yeah, it is because he should have known. And he should have been able to fix it. But I think the problem with Prometheus lies squarely on the shoulders of Damon Lindelof.
Oh, yes.
I think Damon Lindelof, this film suffers exactly the same problems that Lost, the TV series, suffered, which is it is a film of brilliant moments, brilliantly conceived ideas that could not gel them together. And that's exactly the same problem with Lost. If you any Lost fan you talk to, you talk about that last episode. And everybody would go, well, that just didn't work. It's like they just didn't know how to pull it together. And I think that Prometheus has exactly that same problem. Without saying what the ending is, we'll talk about it in spoilers, but it just doesn't gel. And you're right, it's about the halfway point, because up until the halfway point, you are in a sense of wonder. And when you hit that halfway point,
you're being given the best of the film.
Yeah, and there was a word you used when you were talking about it before, which I think is the perfect word to use here. It becomes obvious. And that's the problem, is that by the second half of the film, it's almost like they're saying, oh, we need some monsters now. Oh, we need to do something spooky now. And you're right. It actually almost parrots the structure of Alien. They land, they find something mysterious, then something happens.
They bring it back.
It builds up to something else. And basically, it almost mirrors and mimics the structure of Alien. But not nearly as tense, not nearly as clever. And I actually never found myself scared at all in this movie.
My problem is that it wasn't for me even about the scary thing. I could put aside the concept that it's supposed to be a tense film because I was prepared for that. Like I had been listening to Ridley Scott because the man was preaching out of my Bible and he was saying, this is not an Aliens film, it's part of the Alien mythology. And I went in going like that. I was like, I may not even see an alien in this film.
And if that's
the case, I'm fine with that.
But that's one of the problems with the script, is the fact that when they said, this isn't a prequel, it is its own film, but it shares the common DNA of Alien. Their exact quote, right?
Yeah.
I went, I'm in. I am so excited about that idea. Then as the trailer started to show up, we started to see things like the space jockey. and stuff like that. And I started to go, ooh, so we are going to be a prequel to Alien. The problem with the script, when you finally watch the movie, is it can't decide. It can't decide whether it's a prequel to Alien. It can't decide whether it's its own thing. You know?
All it does is fill you with a whole lot of questions about something that was your understanding, your knowledge. It's like, instead of being a film which is kind of added and tacked on, which is that very, like, it's sort of 90s to 2000, almost to the present, where when we did sequel films or prequel films, we essentially tacked on to the mythos. Hmm. And that's kind of why you watch sequels. It's why you watch any film like that. Like, it's like, it's the same reason I watch the Jason films. I know all of the facts about the stories and all of the connecting points. This film goes, we're going to throw a whole lot of crap at you and give you no answers and then finish with a high school finish. I'm sorry, that's not wrecking anything. A high school grade writing finish.
The ending, without giving anything away, the ending feels like studio interference. And I don't know if it is or not, or if that's what they originally planned, but it feels that way. It feels like now we have to tie it together. Mm. And that just, it felt awkward. It felt out of place. It felt like I didn't need that in any way. And I think there's something, we'll talk about it in spoilers. There's something that happens in the ending. And I think that was brilliantly, and I can't remember if it was you or Richard who said it, who said they didn't deserve that ending. And I thought that was such a great statement. When we get into spoilers, we'll talk a little bit more about that, because I thought that was just so brilliant of a statement, because no, they didn't deserve the ending, you know, they hadn't earned it. It was the film didn't give us that sense of wonder. That being said, it sounds like I'm hating on this movie. I'm not hating on the movie, because I actually think there is a lot of really worthy stuff in this film. I don't think it's rewatchable. That's the problem. I think get away from the hype, watch the film, see the 3D, see the visuals, the visual effects work, the visuals, the design of the film. All that is brilliant. And there are some really, really beautiful scenes and moments in this film. There's a scene between Charlize Theron and Idris Elba that is just masterfully written. And beautifully performed. You sit there and you go, I want more of that. You know what I mean? I want more of that and less of some of the other crap going on in this film.
The problem is, man, I think I should reword. I don't hate this film. I'm just very disappointed. And we both spoke about that. And that really is the word of the day.
That is the word.
Because it really is disappointing.
Yeah.
It's disappointing because you know what all of those other films had? You know what 4 had? 3 to a lesser extent? 2 and 1 at least had? Was nerds and geeks, we stick to the important things. We get things right. We make sure if we're going to set up a scene in a particular way, or we're going to do something with characters, or we're going to base some special sci-fi tech thing, we focus on the details. And this is what's missing out of this film. There's a whole bunch of shit that's just either never explained or really badly written in.
Or like, retrofit to the point where we go, that can't be that way. It doesn't fit, you know what I mean?
No, look, it doesn't fit, and you can throw out all sorts of geek arguments to try and balance these statements, but my problem is that I'm not looking for arguments. I'm not looking for speculation, because that's not what geek films do. Geek films, we get the important tech stuff right. We push it far enough away from a mythos, or we create our own mythos to not need that. But if you're going to attach something to a world that has such a unique writing and tech and styles and all that sort of stuff, it's like, don't fuck up story points. The story is the most important thing to us. If you screw up things like people going outside a ship in a brand new suit that they've just walked around in, and last time they had an hour and a half of air, and then all of a sudden after being outside for 10 minutes they've got 2 minutes of air left, which is an absolute plot point amount of air to get to a particular location. Not saying that that happened, just saying things like that wreck a movie.
Yeah,
because geeks are there for an entire experience. We don't want to get dragged out of a film for things that are just could have been fixed with another edit. When you're spending this much money on a film, couldn't you get one more person? The amount of times you would have watched those films on screen, no one sat down and just went, hey, guys, we didn't explain that at all. Or that person just kind of got left out. We never went back to this section of the film. You must have seen it enough times to have picked up things like this.
Yeah, look, I'm going to – look, I really want to get into a spoiler zone here, because we're dancing around stuff.
Let's do it, man.
And I really want to talk more about it. Let's rate this thing out so that we can basically go into a spoiler zone guilt-free. And I'm going to say that for me personally, I think this is a film that, look, if you are at all interested in this film, you should go see it. I mean, just purely because it's Ridley Scott returning to science fiction, even if he did. And let me just, Richard's not here, but I'm gonna have the ghost of Richard come in for us, because he would say this if he's not here, because he said it to me, and I thought it was brilliant, where he actually said, Ridley Scott has gone from being an innovator to basically being a follower. And I think that's pretty much the case here. He reinvented science fiction with Alien and Blade Runner, and now he really hasn't reinvented anything else. We've seen almost all the concepts in this we've seen before in some form, shape, or another. And so it's kind of disappointing that he actually has lost that visionary sense to him. But anyway, that being said, I think the film has enough in it that is interesting to have a look at. I don't think it's a complete abortion of a movie. But I am going to say to you that throw that hype out the window, because it's not the film you think it's going to be. In any way, shape, or form, it's not going to be the film you think it's going to be. Take it as what it is. If you want to see it as a prequel to Alien, you're going to actually hate it more than if you just take it from the film that it is. And even as in that case, I don't think the film is actually that great. I think the word of today is it's a really disappointing film. It is going to make a lot of money, I think. And I think it's a film that I will probably come back to and rewatch many times over the years, because I'm going to try and pull this thing apart and figure it out. You know what I mean? But I don't think I would pay any more cinema dollars for it. Put it that way. I think I'm done.
Fair enough, man.
Josh.
Look, man, the interesting thing about this is anybody that I talk to with a love of Aliens watches it and they say exactly that. They're either I'm disappointed or I like it. There's two different schools on this. I still lean towards the side that I didn't like this film. That being said, if you're a fan, you will buy it on Blu-ray just like I will. And that's the unfortunate truth to this film. It's like there is enough in it that I think it will fall into its place amongst the movies that I have that are sci-fis, but this will never be spoken about like I'm proud of it. I think this film is a mess, and if I talk to people that aren't fans of Aliens, they just go, that was a pile of trash. Yeah. Because when you stop trying to defend it, and when you stop trying to talk about it as a fan, it's actually not that good a film.
Yeah, I've actually spoken to a few people.
It's a good film, but it's just an average, disappointing blockbuster.
I have actually spoken to a few people recently in the last couple of days who really haven't liked it. And that's kind of disappointing. I actually did get a text message, which I would like to read, if that's okay, really quickly. Sure. From a colleague of mine, actually, who may be coming on to write on the site, maybe coming on to do some film reviews because I really like his opinions. James is his name, and he actually said, saw Prometheus, serious issues with plot and pacing, but I'm glad to see Ridley Scott back doing grotesque sexual and religious imagery. Good on you, James. So I thought, yeah, we'll just share that opinion from James, because I thought that was lovely. All right, let's move into a spoiler zone. We got to get some stuff out there and talk about the real meat of this film. So here we go. So if you have stumbled in here for the very first time, the time codes for this spoiler section are in the show notes. You can fast forward the show. It'll only be about 10 minutes, and rejoin us at the end if you don't want to know any of the ins and outs of Prometheus. However, if you want to know a little bit more about Prometheus, or you have seen it and want to hear our opinions and stuff, stick around. All right, Josh, let's voice it.
The big problem that I have with it is that I think as a concept, it's really good. The idea of us finding a race that basically made us, seeing how they made us, don't have a huge amount of problems with that. But then a friend of mine posted recently a picture which was of a chart of all the aliens and how they appeared in the film. So what person combined with what thing created what.
That was one of the things I was going to talk about, yeah.
Yeah, and when you actually look at that, not only is it grossly un-understandable that these particular creatures come out of this particular kind of a situation, I don't know how having sex breeds a squid. No, I'm sorry, but let's just stop for a minute, all right? So the creatures that made us broke themselves down and created something that's a lot like themselves. So how does a human that gets infected that has sex with another one create a squid.
Well, it's something to do with that black ooze that's coming out of those
no,
tubs.
No, I know, but as a genetic
but
concept,
it also doesn't make sense, because the reason why the alien of the first Alien is that biomechanical look is because it is burst out of the space jockey, which has a biomechanical look, right? Mm. So it's got to take on. The alien that pops out at the end of this thing is all shiny and smooth.
And look, I mean, that's fine. Proto-alien, whatever. I don't even care. My problem with it is that it's sort of like when you're messing with genetics and structure, it's like, couldn't you do 5 minutes of research and perhaps design something that just works a little bit more scientifically?
Well, look, and the other thing is that alien that popped out at the end is not the alien. It's not our alien, obviously.
No, it's not.
Because... Yeah. The space jockey at the end of this movie is never getting back into that chair, which is where they find him. So therefore, it's got to have something to do with the new movie replace flying off in the other ship. And going, because it's also not the same planet. If anybody who's their alien lore, it's supposed to be LV-426, and they're actually on some different planet altogether.
It's 3-4 something.
Yeah, LV. Anyway. Yeah, whatever. It's a completely different planet. So realistically, whatever happens on this planet is, you know, whatever happens on LV-223 stays on LV-233, apparently. But that was actually what I was talking about in the review. I think it was Richard who actually said it. When Noomi Rapace flies off in the vagina ship, basically he said, did it earn that ending? That sort of cliffhanger ending? It didn't earn that ending.
Because by that stage, I was pissed off. There's just little things, like as an example, and this is just shocking writing, like painfully shocking writing. But where you've got the guy, the geologist, who, number one, can we talk about the fact that you screen people that go out on spaceships for psychological profiles, and that guy would never have made it on a ship. But that's
the tattoo guy, yeah.
Yeah, and that look, that's some stupid geek shit that I'll throw away to the side. But what I don't understand is this man is the man that releases these objects called pups. And these objects map a 3D map of the entire globe. This man then, when they say, hey, where are we going? He looks at his wrist and he says, the pups say we should go this way. This is the same man that 10 minutes in the film later gets lost, to which they have a 3D mapping of where everyone is in this entire cave system, yet they don't know where these people are and no one seems to notice the fact that they get left there. Also, the fact that three vehicles go back and yet that's... I don't understand how the breakdown of that goes and how you wouldn't have noticed that people were missing. I'm not done. Then you get these two people infected in this film, one of which somehow manages to make it out of the cave, out to the ship, and then attacks them Incredible Hulk style, and yet we never see anything about the other guy again, who was the first one to be infected.
That's right. And let's also talk about the fact that when they're in the caves, Idris Elba says there's movement in the tunnel. What?
Yeah.
What exactly was moving?
I don't think it was movement. I think that the pup was sensing the movement through the door, which was the...
But he wouldn't have been moving. He was frozen.
But maybe biological signs?
I don't know. I found that really odd. I thought, what the fuck would be moving? I didn't understand that at all. Because when they find him, they release him. He's frozen. And I love the fact that this man who went to great lengths to go and create life all over the place, immediately his first reaction is rip the head off the person who speaks his language.
Look, I mean, the storyline concepts that I almost, like, I have tried to give this film everything I could, Dave. I looked at that scene and I went, this guy's woken up. He knows that something dramatic has happened to them, and he realizes that these people have no idea about what their plan was, whatever that plan was, and just decided that he needed to accomplish his mission.
But he then kills the one of them that can actually speak his language.
I thought he was out to kill them all, to be honest.
Sure, but,
Look, I mean, none of it makes sense. Another problem that I have is that we have this situation where David's head, who, by the way, we've seen several of these androids with their heads ripped off, and we know that they can't function without power.
That's
and
right.
And this is supposed to be a previous alien, a previous android. But further to that point, after ship rammed into it and plowed into the ground, his head is still in exactly the same place in the ship's cockpit. Sorry, I have an issue with that.
Bishop had power, and he got it, but it was his upper torso, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just a lot of that sort of stuff where I just look at it and I'm like, I just feel like no one spent attention to detail on this because everybody was trying to get it finished. Yeah. And if there's half an hour cut out of that film, perhaps it was important.
Can
perhaps
I say that this
needed to be there?
Can I also say this wouldn't be the first time that a director's cut of a Ridley Scott film actually makes the film better? I would like to see a director's cut of this film.
Yeah, I would like to see what Ridley Scott had initially intended. But look,
now,
man,
as I was saying about the studio interference on this film, I actually really felt that way. I felt like we finished the film, she flies off into space, and then we cut back in and we have the birth of the alien pop out. And all I can think is, I didn't need that in any way, shape, or form. Mm. I did not need that. That was added for fan service. And yeah. Added for fan service, but completely unsatisfying because that's not our alien. Mm. And so I didn't even feel like I got payoff on it because I thought, what the hell is that weird looking thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just the whole ending of this film, and I think that's probably what left the most disappointing taste. Everything else, I could almost kind of go, oh, well, they're doing their own thing, blah, blah, blah. But then to just kind of throw it in your face at last minute, going, see, we are a prequel. You know, and you sit there and go, no, that doesn't make you a prequel. I'm sorry. Because if you're going to go that route, if you're actually going to be that blatantly about trying to be a prequel, that doesn't fit.
Mm.
You know, none of that fits. If you hadn't had that part, you could have gotten away with the whole, we're the same DNA, but we're not really a prequel, and we would have bought it. You know what I mean? But the fact that they slap you in the face at the end and say, see, we're a prequel, I just went, no, that's not right at all. You know what I mean? Because it was too obvious at that point.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, man. I really do.
So, yeah, and look, there's, as I say, I think you've mentioned most of the points that I want to make. The first attack, I mean, what was with the little snaky penis-looking things? You know what I mean?
Well, look, I mean, those were the worms when the liquid hit them. I was okay with that.
Yeah, some strange worm-type creature that's growing and floating around in there. I like the idea.
There was that.
Yeah.
Where did those come from?
Yeah,
Where did the worms come from, and why were they there? But again, I mean, that's small stuff. I'm not gonna
begrudge them all those little bits, but I do agree with you. I think the whole Incredible Hulk sequence was just bizarre and really unnecessary. And I also thought, let me think. Oh, the other thing I wanted to talk about was Guy Pearce.
Yeah,
which was the worst makeup job I've seen in years, and it just raised the question as to why did they have to cast Guy Pearce. Why didn't they just cast a distinguished older actor and actually have somebody who could actually pull that off? I just thought it was just poorly, poorly done, you know? And it's like, it was almost like a cynical piece of casting. We didn't need Guy Pearce in this film.
No, we really didn't.
You know, and as soon as we saw Guy Pearce in lots of makeup, it was kind of spoiled because I kind of went, he's coming back.
Mm.
You know, he's under, and then they show you the operating table, and you go, oh, it's configured for a man. I wonder who. some of the big mystery, the quote unquote big mysteries, weren't big mysteries. No. What did you think, very quickly before we leave this spoiler, what did you think of the abortion scene?
I think my bigger problem with it was contextual. Like, I felt like I was so confused as to how that could have come out of her and what they were trying to say by that. And for me having to piece together what the black substance was and what it did to things and how it would have created out of something like, let's be honest, semen, how it would have created something like that, black ooze combined with that to create it, just like I kept having problems with figuring out why it was happening. It was so badly explained. It was almost like they thought if they threw all of these points at you that you wouldn't ask questions and you'd actually just become a geek over it and start obsessing to try and figure out what it was. That happened with me, but I didn't give them any joy over it. I just went, I feel like you guys just didn't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's the feeling I get. It's like your explanation of the black ooze doesn't agree with me because it's like I agree with it on a concept, the black ooze breaking down something, creating life out of it. But it makes sense with the human and the engineer because the engineers are human DNA. Therefore, when it's rebuilt, it built us. I don't understand where that came from. Like,
well, I guess when you think about it, it makes sense with the penis worms. Because they were some sort of strange swimming worm creature that got mutated and turned into something
else. And that makes sense. It combines with the worms. We get a snake. I can buy that. You know, it's a reconfiguring of the same DNA. I don't get that DNA.
No.
I don't get how that connects. And I don't agree with it because it's like science fiction is supposed to be science fiction.
Yeah.
Like there's supposed to be some level of effort put into that. And I just feel like that's a real letdown. Like I'm like, I don't understand how two human lots of DNA and a drop of something else would create
a squid.
Something complete. Yeah, a squid. Like something as completely left of field as that. It's like you haven't reconfigured the DNA. You've just made something else entirely.
See, it would have almost even made more sense, and I'm not saying it would have made total sense, but it even would have made more sense had that squid thing come out of one of the guys who had been infected by the worm thing. Because then because we're starting to deal with strange alien DNA.
Exactly. We're dealing with hybrids of hybrids.
That's right. And then we could have had some sort of squiddy thing come out of them. But to come out of her made no sense. And the fact that it also gestated so fucking fast. Yeah. The whole scene, from the minute she felt that she was pregnant through to her ripping the thing out of her stomach, with David going all bizarre, the Michael Fassbender alien going all bizarre, it all seemed really fast. It all felt like overnight, all the rules just changed.
Yeah.
And that was actually one of the problems I had, is the film feels jumpy and skippy. Yeah. It feels kind of like, all right, time to change gears now. Let's do something gross.
Anyway, like Prometheus, the film, I am now done with it, and let's stop talking.
All right, let's take us out of the spoiler zone. If there's nothing more to add, let's get out of here. I will say that my spoiler vault's warmer than your basement.
Yes, but I'd also like to ask the question, if we're going to be talking about things that don't make sense, how are we both in a cone when we're in different places? Let's move on.
All right, so that's our discussion on Prometheus. If you want to see the film and then go and have a listen to our spoiler zone, it's a film that we are done with now, I think. I think we can move on. What's our next
Mike's down. And I'm done.
What's the next big blockbuster for us? I think it's it's Snow White. That's the one.
Wow.
That's the next big blockbuster for the new year. And then there's Spider-Man. Oh, boy, we got a whole bunch of stuff coming. All right, let's move on. Let's do a list. Oh, no, we got some feedback. Let's do this feedback first. Short ones this week. I got two quick feedbacks. First one comes from Rachel Atkinson, who is from the Funky Film Show. She's actually written us a very short note that said, "Loved your Red Tails review. Only good thing about seeing a bad film is tearing it to pieces."
Oh, yes. Amen. Amen.
So good on you, Rachel. And Peter Young has written to us and says, "Hi, David, Richard, and Josh. I dropped by my local non-specific music and movie store with always cheaper prices to pick up the..." Oh dear. To pick up the new Necronomicon edition of my favorite movie of all time, Army of Darkness. I was actually thinking about buying this, Josh. It says, "I already have Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 in Necronomicon editions, so it was a natural thing to buy Army of Darkness in the same ultra cool packaging."
I'm proud of you, dude.
Sorry?
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of him.
Well, wait. He says, "To my dismay, the new Army of Darkness edition contains one Blu-ray only, the theatrical cut, with the director's cut and extras appearing on dodgy DVD only. What is the fucking point? How hard would it be to master the director's cut and extras in high def? Sorry, Bruce and Sam, I refuse to pay $40 for pretty packaging with a shithouse SD content. I already have the Army of Darkness theatrical cut on Blu-ray. I am not shelling out for what only amounts to a different ending on DVD. I feel better now."
I'm proud of him now.
I am very proud of you, Peter. He says, "I feel better now." Cheers, Peter.
Good. Don't ever hesitate to write in and vent, because that's exactly how we feel, man. It's like, look, if you're going to charge us more or create a fancy new version, it needs to be not a fancy new version with a hat. The whole reason that people buy collector's editions is to get the collector's content.
Absolutely. And I am so glad you did write it. Anytime you find something like this, write in, because I was going to buy that. So I'm glad I've got some input now. And I know not to buy that, because I was going to buy it because I was seduced by the packaging as well. You're right, the hat. But I really want the film in high def. And I actually want both versions of the film in high def, not just one of them. So there you go. All right. So there's our feedback. If you feel like writing to us, you can write us at feedback@filmactually.com. Josh,
yes.
Our list of five this week, the five most, not the five, but five most disappointing blockbusters.
Yeah.
This list kind of came about because, let's face it, Prometheus is a pretty disappointing blockbuster. And we were trying to think of a list for this week, and we're thinking about alien horror movies and all sorts of other stuff. You know what? Let's just talk about the disappointment.
You know? Oh, man. So, and the list I have, so many disappointments, so many parts of my life and my childhood destroyed
because
of particular films.
None of these actually destroyed childhoods for me, but they were five particularly disappointing or bitter pills to swallow. Let's start it off. What's your number five, Josh?
My number five, man, a film that we've both seen and we both were equally as both disappointed and ragey towards when we saw this with you, bring back a few memories here with 2012.
Oh, yes.
Man, you've got the man that I've trusted to make Independence Day and so many other good blockbuster films, and I go into that cinema and come out feeling like my eyes have been raped for 3 hours.
That was a very disappointing film. I agree with you 100%. Okay, Josh, I have a theme running through my list.
I can't wait to try and see if I can figure out what
it is. See if you can pick it up, all right? My number five is Spider-Man 3. After a number one, which I really enjoyed, a number two, which I thought was a stellar sequel, and I actually thought that number two is one of the films that I define superheroes films by, I thought Spider-Man 3 was particularly disappointing with Emo Boy and his emo dance moves and too many villains and a really lackluster Venom, and I just walked out thinking, what the hell did you do wrong? And I just thought that was a very disappointing entry into a series that I thought was doing quite well. So there you go. Your number four.
My number four, Land of the Dead.
Huge zombie fan. Yep.
Amazing, amazing man with an amazing ability to create weird and, you know, almost tacky B-grade horrors. A man that was always violent and always full of interesting places to put people psychologically with zombies. And then to get Land of the Dead. A film where we get the dead now being looked at like animals, like someone was going to create some sort of a group which says that we shouldn't kill zombies.
Yeah, I can fully appreciate the disappointment factor on that film.
I was burning when I came out of that film.
Especially considering the pedigree of the films before it. I mean, let's forget Day of the Dead for this point, but Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead.
Day of the Dead.
Well, Day of the Dead's the weakest out of that trilogy, though.
Definitely.
You know, and you look at it and you go, okay, that was already kind of a disappointing conclusion to that trilogy. But then to bring it back with that, especially, what is it, 2 decades later, you know?
Fuck yeah.
Oh, dear. My number four is Batman Forever. Now, I know Batman and Robin is the worst film. Dude,
just save that one.
Okay.
We'll come back to it soon.
I will just I will just point out, though, that Batman Forever is number three in the Batman series.
I had already got that.
Yeah, good. Okay, I'm just talking about my theme here. Yeah. All right, so I'll hold on to Batman Forever. We'll come back to it. Josh, what's your number three?
My number three, Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this, I didn't know Daredevil. I didn't know what he did. I didn't know why he was there, but the trailer looked all right. And superhero films were still kind of in their infancy. We were still kind of just starting to play with the concept that they sold and people watched them. And when I watched that film, what the hell was going on? I've watched both versions, their original and their new recut version, and I still think that movie is a pile of trash.
All right, I'm actually coming in from a slightly different direction. I actually was a big Daredevil fan and was really excited for Daredevil, and I agree with you. It's a really disappointing film. I actually do disagree, though. I think the director's cut is a better version of the film.
It's better.
It's still not great, and it's still disappointing, but it is better.
But either way, I saw it at the cinemas, and definitely not.
No, that's fair. That's fair. My number three is X-Men Last Stand. Because
what, three being the
opportune word here. X-Men Last Stand was a film that followed the X-Men, which I thought was a really good film. Think about what I said about Spider-Man. X-Men, which I thought was a really good film. X-Men 2, which is another superhero film that I judge all superhero films by, which I think is a stellar film. And then to basically completely sink the trilogy with that last film was a really disappointing effort. And I remember walking to you going, what the hell? What the hell happened? Yeah. Little did I know they could get worse. But we'll come back to that on a later day. Number two, Josh.
Number two's your one, man. Let's talk this out. Batman Forever.
All right, Batman Forever. I got to tell you, Batman, I actually really liked Batman Returns. I was actually never a huge fan of the very first Batman with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton, but I really liked the second one because it kind of added a darker edge to it. And I really quite liked what Tim Burton did with that second film. Studio executives didn't agree and basically fired him. And it was several years until another Batman film came out. And when the posters came out for Joel Schumacher's Batman Forever, Jim Carrey playing the Riddler seemed like a perfect choice. Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face, come on. And we started seeing trailers for it. And I thought, okay, I'll give him benefit of the doubt. We could be onto something. They're bringing it back. Big budget. Oh, my God.
Big budget being about the only thing that was good about that film.
What the hell happened? Day-glow paint. Everything. Day-glow paint and silly. Everything that the first two films tried to get rid of, which was that camp nature to it, Joel Schumacher just put back in spades.
Mm.
And let's not forget nipples.
Yeah.
Wow. Your opinions?
So much. No, exactly the same. Amen. I'm done. That's all I needed, Dave. You summed it up perfectly there.
Yeah. No. And let's think. Batman and Robin is by far a worse film. But it wasn't disappointing because I already didn't expect it to be good. Mm. Not after Batman Forever. I actually really didn't like Batman Forever. Okay, so that brings me to my number two, I guess, does it?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I got to say, my number two actually was a last-minute change, funnily enough.
Wait. Is this a film that's the third of a group of films?
It would be the third
group of films. No way.
And it would have to be Transformers Dark of the Moon, which I hated, as we
Dude,
said.
Dude, it's cool. Don't worry. I've been watching it every day at work recently, and it just gets worse the more I see it.
Yeah. The reason why this is on the list, I actually had Transformers 2 originally because I love the first one so much, and then to have the second one be so bad was a real big disappointment. What was actually disappointing about Transformers 3, though, was it looked like they had redeemed themselves. The trailers were good. The footage that we went and saw was good. The 3D looked great. And everything about the film was saying, okay, it looks... And they actually acknowledged all the problems of part two and said, we're not going to do that again. And then to basically do it again was a slap in the face. So I was really disappointed in number three. But yeah, that's personal. I know you actually liked it more than I did.
Only just.
Because it was crap.
Only just. I just liked it because it was a lot more Transformers and a lot less bullshit, but it's definitely far from good.
Yeah, it's far from good. You're number two, Josh. No, number two?
You've got number one.
You're number one. Oh, you're number one.
Yeah.
Hit me with it.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Literally psychologically scarring as a smaller person. I went to watch this film. I was away on holiday when it came out, and I was a kid. And when I got back, I was so excited to see it. And it was bizarre. Only came out 3 weeks ago, not in the cinemas. And I was like, what's going on here? And it took me an extra like 3 years to catch up with it. And then I finally saw the wonderfulness that was Mario Bros.
Oh.
And I died a little inside.
Oh, man. Yeah, I can see that. I can't believe you were actually excited for it.
I was excited. I was a kid. I didn't know about newspapers telling you shit about films. I just went and saw them because that was what you did. You were happy to see films.
And this would have been, and you were a gamer.
Mm.
Oh, man, that would have destroyed you.
Oh, dude, it was a couple of months before I came out the other end of that one. It's the first time, I think, as a kid, I ever stomached the concept of not liking something. You know, as a kid, you just love everything.
Yeah.
I think that was the first moment where I was like, something is wrong with that film. And then, yeah, from there, it all just got worse.
Isn't it an amazing moment when you reach that age where you actually, everything stops being just, oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. I liked it. Suddenly you watch that one film and you go, I feel sick.
Yeah. That was that film for me.
I think the film for me,
mind a little.
I think the film for me was Condor Man. We've talked about this before.
No.
I think that was the first time I actually watched a film going, something's not right here. There is nothing I can do to defend this film. Yes. All right, my number one is going to be a controversial choice, but you are aware of how I feel about this movie. And it's actually historical because I have come
to... Oh, God, you're not going to do it, are you? You totally are.
I'm going to do it. Come to terms with it now, but at the time, I think this film for me was as angry-making as Wolverine was for you. I've kind of come to terms with this film since, but it's got to be Alien 3, which absolutely ripped my heart out and stomped it on the floor when I saw it the first time. Because I was a huge Alien fan, and I had loved Aliens, and for this film to just basically say, remember everything you liked about the other films? Fuck that. it destroyed me at the time. I hated it. I was so angry. I would have these long diatribes about everything that was wrong about it. As I say, I've come to terms with it now.
Can I just say, it's definitely Ripley at her most badass. She is freaking
the film
so
needed,
cool.
The film needed more than Ripley being a badass.
I think that there is more, but we won't go into this. This is pointless. Why did you bring this up on my presence? We're always going to go head-to-head. I think you're wrong, Dave. I really don't. I think there is so much wrong about Aliens 3. And that's exactly why I made sure in the Prometheus review that I'm very clear. I am aware that Prometheus is better than both of those films, probably stapled together, put on Blu-ray, and remastered sound. And if you somehow combined all that together, it still would be nowhere near Prometheus. But none of them are good films.
That's true. Can I share with you five runners-ups and see what you think of these? Superman 3, Karate Definitely. Kid 3, Jurassic Park 3, Beverly Hills Cop 3, and Lethal Weapon 3. Not to say that Lethal Weapon 3 is actually an awful film, but it was disappointing after 1 and 2. Beverly Hills Cop 3 is crap. Jurassic Park 3 is crap. Karate Kid 3 was crap. Superman 3, and like Superman 4 is by far worse, of course, but we were braced for it. Superman 3 was already so bad. there you go. Oh, I should have put Jaws 3 in there as well.
Well, there you go. You can add it now.
I can add it now. So there you go. The threes. The curse of the three.
Fair enough.
Which leads me to wonder, there is a three coming up. What is it? Oh, yeah, The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I'm trying to hold back on that
one. I'm holding my breath on that. Anyway, that's enough of all of that. Josh, where can people find more of you on the internet?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Make sure that you head over there and check it out, because not only is there a whole lot of gaming stuff over there, there's also an awesome Facebook page which is constantly updated with all sorts of content. Competitions running almost every week at the moment. So guys, if you want to, head over there and you can get yourself some swag. Literally named Dave's sack.
My sack, people. My sack's got nothing to do with this.
That is, of course, Dave Kaziki's sack. But Dave Kaziki's sack is on the line, and you guys should get in for that.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to leave that up in the air like that.
You leave that right where it is.
Over to you, Dave.
You can find more of me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVain. Let's not forget, you can also find more of Richard when he's around, therealbits.com or at DVDbits on Twitter. If you want to write to us and let us know about anything that's going on in your lives, why not? feedback@filmactually.com or 0280113167 is our voicemail line. And you can also use our Skype connection, which is Geek Actually, all one word. Find out everything about us. If you want merchandise, cups, mugs, whatever, you know, find out anything you want, just go to geekactually.com. It's all there. Now, the other thing I was going to say was we opened with a clip from Aliens because it was fun. And we're closing the show with a track from Mark Streitenfeld, I think it is. Mark Streitenfeld's score from Prometheus, which was actually not a bad score. Not as memorable as the previous Alien films, but not bad. That's all I've got. Josh, have you got anything more?
Nope, that's me, man.
In that case, I'm going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, or Ridley Scott would like you to believe they are. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, Josh.
Bye, man.